stream holder, but I leave the audio going just for casual chatter or anything, just for fun. Nice. I can see some people already in the chat. That's great.
I'm not seeing the chat.
I'm on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to click.
Oh. Yeah, that'll help.
I didn't set foot on Twitch for ages.
Hey, we're live. Everyone can see us now. So what's up, everybody? This is the Cyberpunk Uncensored Mad Queen Breakdown Tutorial Crash Course is what I'm calling it. Everybody that's been watching what I'm doing, I'm making Cyberpunk Red tutorial crash course videos every day, kind of showing the different mechanics of Red. And in this one, I have a great interview with the Mad Queen who's joining me. And so I'm going to call this the Mad Queen Breakdown Tutorial Crash Course. So you can anyone that wants to learn about Mad Queen, this is the video for you. I can't imagine that you haven't already heard of her. If you haven't, you're probably living under a rock. She's pretty much not just the Mad Queen, but the queen of cyberpunk lore, as I can see it. She's been dominating cyberpunk lore and vids and stuff for a while now and giving out some great content. But yeah, let's get right into it. Mad Queen, thanks so much for joining me. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It sounds so weird to me, the concept of the interview. It's like, oh, people can know about you. People want to know about me?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Yeah, when I announced this, you know, I do all the videos about, you know, cyberpunk and all that. But when I do these interviews, it's always shocking to me how, like, you know, the guys at Artalsorian, yourself, other GMs I interview, they're always like, what? Who wants to hear about me? Like, you know, everyone's into cyberpunk, but you got to remember, like, you know, you have fans as well. Like, you know, I know you love cyberpunk just like me, but the fact you're putting out all this great content, you're building a fan base that really appreciate what you're doing. And I think because of that, they want to learn more about you as well as, you know, the cyberpunk information you're putting out. So that's why I'm trying to do these videos.
Yeah, but it's funny because usually I'm the person interviewing. So right. Being on the other side is like, oh, look at that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, look at all, you know, you've, like I said, kicked out some great content aside from interviews, just everything you've done. But before we get into that, I'm starting to get ahead of myself. And I do have some questions about everything that you're doing currently and recently. I want to take it back a bit. This is for people that maybe either don't know a lot about you or know a lot about you with what you're doing now, but maybe not where you came from. So I was hoping maybe you could kind of, you know, just talk for a few minutes or however long you want to. We'll take me all the way back to little Mad Queen or maybe Mad Princess, maybe back then. I don't know. But, you know, just little Mad Queen, where you grew up, how you got into gaming and. You know, how you got to be where you are now, but start back when you were a kid. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up half in Spain, half in Germany, in the south of Germany. And I was born in Spain. And how I got into gaming, the funny story is that, I come from a very middle, low-class family. And my family couldn't afford the console. So I used to babysit the kids of my neighbors for free if they had a console.
That's awesome.
So I could play things while you know I was taking care of the kids, because usually they have to go to sleep early, and then from the time they go to sleep until the parents arrive that they want someone to be there, I was playing the console. And then when I was older, I started to make my own money. Then I could afford one.
That's so funny. So you're pretty much babysitting, getting paid in game time, so you could go.
Yes,
and play.
Yes. They adored it because I never said specifically that this was for the console reason. Like, oh no, you are very friends with my parents, and it would be ugly for me to, you know, ask you for money. So no problem, I will do it for free.
Oh yeah, that's awesome.
So, well, they as they could go out more often because the babysitter was for free, I played more.
Nice. What games were you into? What console was that, and what games did you first get
Oh,
into as a kid?
it was a Nintendo, the one with the first Mario. Which model was that? That and the other one
If it's
have a
the
Sega Mega Drive that I played Sonic.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you originally started with the original Nintendo with Mario Brothers. Nice. Okay,
Yes.
and then you got into Sonic Hedgehog, then Sega.
Yeah, well, I played so much Sonic that one day I woke up with the mark of the controller in my fingers. So
Yeah.
much play. I dreamt with rings.
Nice.
Playing so much Sonic.
I think we've all had that. I remember being a kid and having sore thumbs from playing Nintendo and stuff a lot, staying up all night with friends and playing, and that's funny. But yeah, so you started off with that and got into gaming. I love the fact that you would pick up babysitting gigs just to get free game time.
And also I used to create my own games, but they were super simple games that were like pen and paper games in written adventures,
Oh,
and I
really?
programmed them in DOS. But it was like I'm talking about I was like 11, 12, so don't expect like a super big thing. So I programmed small games that were I was a fan of books that are called Choose Your Own Adventure.
Oh, yeah, I love those.
To one page or another, so it was a story that, depending on the decision you took, it took you to one place or to another.
Oh, yeah, no, I love those. That's really cool that you did that.
Yeah.
So even as 10, 11 years old, you at least knew some basic, DOS programming and stuff, huh?
Yes, very basic. I could do a couple of things. I remade the snake,
Oh,
the
really?
game snake. I
Yeah.
can play it on mobile now.
Wow. That's pretty cool for a 10 or 11 year old. I mean, I know you say it's basic, but I mean, I wasn't programming little games and stuff when I was 10. That's really cool.
Well, the truth is that I started doing things very young. Very. I mean, when I was 15, I was already working as a graphic designer.
Oh, wow.
And when I was like 7, I started learning photography because my mother was a very famous fashion photographer in Germany. And she came to Spain because back in the day when she came here, they weren't you learn photography in fine arts. And there wasn't a specific career that was photography. So there wasn't people that were as specialized as people that came from abroad. So she came to Spain to work as a fashion photographer. And then at some point she decided to quit her career to raise her family. But she still was passionate about photography. So what she did was teaching me how to do it. And it was funny because, well, I learned how to develop my own pictures. And I remember when I was a kid, the lens of the machine to develop, I don't remember what's the name in English. I remember grabbing the lens with my hands like this, and then years later, when I was an adult, I saw it and it was this big. But for me, it was like this when I learned how to do it.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's awesome that you bring that up. Like, I totally know what you mean. I've had things like that too that I remember as a kid, and they seemed so epic and whatever. And then you see it as an adult, and you're like, wow, this really wasn't big or heavy or whatever it was. You realize how small you were. It's really neat. So, what if you started off? I mean, obviously, you had a I don't know, kind of an advanced childhood in that sense that you knew how to program, you're into graphic design, you already got a job as a graphic designer at 15, you were all into that. What got you into, did you ever get into, I mean, I know you got into the video game stuff, we'll get into that in a minute, and got on YouTube, and that's where I think your claim to fame or how I heard of you was from, was online and such. But prior to that, coming from, playing video games for babysitting gigs, how did you progress? Did you get into any tabletop role-playing games, or was it strictly video games for you along
Oh
the way?
yes, I played an insane amount of tabletop, especially Cyberpunk 2020 and Vampire Masquerade.
Oh, okay,
Well,
nice.
most of World of Darkness, but the one that I liked the most was Vampire Masquerade. But I stopped in the second edition because then the following ones I didn't like them. The third I think it was horrible. The fourth I had no interest, and the fifth I think the fifth is the newest one, and I didn't even bother. I didn't like how they evolved the timeline. And I started with Cyberpunk 2020 when I was in high school.
Wow.
And well, I also we tried to move to the third edition, but Well,
Yeah.
we tried, but we didn't like we didn't like it a lot, so we kept playing Cyberpunk 2024 for a long time.
Yeah, I can
But
agree
I
with
played
that.
a lot. I played Ars Magica, I played Aquelarre, I played Paranoia.
Nice.
I have a list of a lot of games that I
Did
Dungeons
you
and Dragons, Lord of the Rings, I think.
and did you stay in with, stay into video games as well during your tabletop role playing?
Well, video games is more like a private thing to do because I'm not into multiplayers. So
Oh.
for me, video games is a private thing, and then tabletop is social.
Okay,
In
cool.
fact, when I was in high school, I spent most of my free time learning to do how to do things, because well, I had a culture jam group. Well, group we were too, and that's how we started designing things. And at that time, Macromedia was designing the new what's the name of the program? I can't remember. That later Adobe bought it. It's now what it is, Photoshop and Freehand. The program was
Oh,
Freehand.
okay.
Now it's Photoshop and Illustrator. So Macromedia made groups of very young people that was into design to give them ideas for the tools, how to develop the design tools that they did. Back in the day, Macromedia was like the thing. Now it's Adobe because they bought it. But I wasn't too into these groups. I also met a person that helped me in my career later. And I spent most of the time learning how to do things, learning how to use the programs. Then I had some gigs in design, so I didn't have a lot of free time. So my only free time was playing pen and paper games. My only social time was playing pen and paper games. So that's the memory that I have mostly about Cyberpunk 2020. It was like the time, this my social time in high school.
That's awesome. How did you get started with Cyberpunk 2020? How did you get into it?
Well, one day a friend of mine that was our game director came with Cyberpunk 2020 and said, "Hey, I have a new game. Would you like to try it?" Said, "Sure, let's try it. What's this about?" "Yeah, it's Cyberpunk in the future."
Yeah. So how
It
did
was funny. It was funny because we got so much into it that when The Matrix was released, we went to the cinema, and we filtered the film to understand it was about Cyberpunk 2020. Like, it's a netrunner that's called Neo. He's fighting against Cysops, and we filtered all the movie like it was an adaptation of Cyberpunk 2020.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it fits well. That's awesome. So how did you end up, I can see, how you got into Cyberpunk 2020, and that was kind of your favorite over the course of the other versions, obviously, over the years. But then how did you end up, because I see that you got on YouTube. I don't know which came first, Cyberpunk 2077 hype for you, or the YouTube sort of stuff, because of
The
Okay, yeah, because I was going to say you've been on there for what, like about 4 years or more, but you kind of started doing, promoting or giving breakdowns and, I don't know, videos about other video games like Fallout. I saw you did a bunch of those when you first started and then got into other games. So how did you kind of get into YouTube and what kind of brought you there?
That's a very, very, very funny story. So I was when I started on YouTube, I started as a hobby. And I was an art director and in a company working for majors, Disney, Warner, and all that. And I didn't like the job. I know I did like the job, but it wasn't creative. You had no creative freedom because mass market is you have to always do a very typical things to sell it for as much people as possible. And also, I had the problem in this company that I sometimes felt like I was forced to do things. I wasn't comfortable, ethically speaking.
Oh.
And sometimes you get like trapped in the corporate wheel, and you move forward, and you don't look at what you're doing, and you don't look at the way you're treating people. And I didn't like it. I felt very uncomfortable with that. And I was wondering what could I do about it, and that probably I should look for another company to work, that maybe something that was more humble than working for big brands, but a company that I could respect more, and that allowed me to take decisions that I could feel ethically comfortable, and I wanted to quit my job. And while I was thinking, what do? I quit? I don't quit. I had an accident visiting a provider that we had when working in that company. And it took me 1 year to be able to walk again. So in this year, I had a lot of time to think about my choices, and I quit the job. And I was looking for another company and investigating the companies that made offers. And because, well, I had in my country, I had a certain name as an art director. And also as a photographer, my biggest exhibition as photographer had like 40,000 visitors.
Wow. That.
And I have a lot of awards and blah, blah, blah. And while I couldn't walk, I stayed at home. I had my modest YouTube channel that I did, you know, to pass the time. And mostly about Fallout 4, because I got super obsessed with the building part of the game. And at some point, I made a video about, I believe it was Ghost in the Shell, and I was talking, oh, the cyberpunk classic, blah, blah, blah. And at that point, I didn't know, because I learned about Cyberpunk 2077 very late. I didn't know the game was in the works. So I released this video about Ghost in the Shell, and my followers started asking, what's this cyberpunk thing? And I thought, well, I'm going to make a video talking about, you know, cyberpunk and cyberpunk literature and cyberpunk films. So I wanted to start the video with a quote from Pat Cadigan, and I Googled it because I couldn't remember. And the typical thing that you start Googling it and you jump from one page to another, and suddenly on the top of my Google list, it said Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, there's a new installment of the pen and paper game. And I didn't know. That's super weird. And I entered, and then I saw the original teaser that they had. The one, you know, with the cyberpsychoid on the stack. And I was like, I had to watch it like 5 times in a row just to assimilate the fact that this was a video game based on Cyberpunk 2020. And that day I didn't sleep. I mean, I spent the night looking for news, learning everything about the game, learning what was going on, learning what did Mike Pondsmith think about it. Because I know that he tried to adapt the pen and paper game to video game in the past, but he wasn't happy with the options he was given, and the projects died. So, well, I went crazy, and the next day I released the video to talking about everything we knew about Cyberpunk 2077. But parallel to this, I was still looking for, you know, a company that I would love to work with. And I kept talking about Cyberpunk and explaining the lore, like, listen to me, you're going to love this. You don't know it, but I'll explain to you. And then people started to get interest about this universe. And suddenly I saw myself making money out of my YouTube channel, which is something that I didn't expect. And at some point, I started to make enough to make a living. And I thought, well, why not? Because maybe, I mean, when you are on YouTube, you don't work directly for YouTube. It's true that YouTube kind of trying to force you to do bad things like being clickbait, and they award the people that is clickbait, let's be honest, and the people that like to create controversies and such. But it's a place where I can take my own decisions, mm-hmm. and I can be wrong, but if I'm wrong, it's my responsibility. It's not because, you know, I'm following the orders of someone or because I feel like I have to do it. And I thought, well, I have this requisite. I can make a modest living, but I can make a living. So let's go with it. And this is how I started to be a professional YouTuber.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you did. And somebody in here in the chat too. And just so everybody knows in the live chat, if you have any questions for Mad Queen, definitely put them there in the chat. And I'll try to get to all of them as we go. I've got a bunch of questions that I've been collecting from our community over the past, you know, week or so. One of which I just wanted to mention was, you know, what were your thoughts on when the 2077 teaser dropped? And I think you just kind of summarized that with you didn't even sleep. You watched it a bunch of times and then it just, you got obsessed. You started researching. So there you go. I think Eric, who asked that question, she didn't sleep. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I was so amazed that the European studio was developing it, because there's a huge cultural difference between Europe and the States. And usually the cultural products, films and series that are made in Europe, not counting the ones in London that are inside the Hollywood machinery, but the continental Europe, usually are more crude. The European style is way more crude. And I thought it was fitting for Cyberpunk that it wasn't an American studio but a continental European studio that developed the game. I thought it was going to make it more interesting.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And also, I see that Harko in the chat, when you were talking about how you couldn't, stick with the job you had because it was felt immoral at times and things like that, and you left, he put in there, yeah, Mad Queen is not a corpo. So no, you're not an exec. And game not Zine, I don't know if I'm getting that name right. Game no to Zine said she's a total media. I would definitely agree. I think you're probably, as Cyberpunk Red allows, you're multi-classing as a rocker boy media, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, both people say that I'm either a rocker boy or a media.
There you
Well,
go,
actually,
yeah.
rocker boy and media are classes that are very similar. Sometimes it's like the same class. Like rocker boys go for, more like the feeling and going to the gut, and medias are like, okay, be smart and think I'm going to give you facts.
Yeah,
But you could mix things.
both are influencers. They're just, sometimes one's a little more chaotic and anarchy style, sometimes the other's a little more, contrived and tactful with it, maybe. I don't know. And they can both
There are a
cross
lot
over.
of mediums that are very
That's true.
chaotic. I mean, Dr. Parra, for instance, I read on IMDb that he's going to be in Cyberpunk 2077. I was like, Dr. Paradox is like a secondary character in the background that is a crazy media that has a scream sheet that makes conspiracy theories and he's a super fun character.
Yeah, that makes sense. What back to when I was just talking about that and we were kind of, calling you a rocker boy media, you personally, what role do you connect with the most, whether 2020 or Red or 2077, whatever, just in general, which is your favorite, to play or to look into, and which do you think you relate with the most? Do you agree on that media rocker boy?
Well, media rocker boy as a person, but as a player, my role is solo, has always been
Oh,
solo.
wow.
And my longest living character, that is a solo core called Alice Cooper, who, by the way, appears in Cyberpunk Red, so it's canonical.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, I saw
That was
in the oh, I'm forgetting the name of it now, but the fake media site in the book where it says Mad Queens is
Cotton.
one of the tabs. Yeah. That was
Oh,
great.
yes. I mean, I have the Easter egg as the Mad Queen. But then Cooper is also there
Yeah.
as
Like
a
a
character.
yeah, very cool. So what with the what I know that you're heavily into the lore side of things. Myself as a game master and running the brand, I'm more focused on like game master tips, the round table, these interview style things. Live gameplay is a big part of our brand, so I'm heavily into like the rules. And when it comes to lore, like a lot of game masters that are maybe getting into Red and such, I'll use the lore to kind of build aesthetics and a vibe. But I won't incorporate all of it in because then it'll feel too contrived to the players. Like you're not going to meet everybody famous in the world or whatever. But I feel that because of that, I've got a lot to learn about the lore. Like I read through it and stuff, but I want to get more into it and I'm trying to, learn more about it. And that's where your videos I think are super helpful. I love what you do with them all, especially like those fake ads. You made all those fake ads, right? Nope.
Yes, I did that. It was funny because originally I explained this idea with to Obsidian of the Triple S League, and that if to ask him is if he could like he's in the community of mod creation, so he knows a lot of voice actors and actresses, and I wanted to ask him if he may help me find people to narrate the ads. And he understood that I was going to make a sort of completely different thing. And I believe the first one that I did was the Raven Microcybernetics. And I did this ad because it was the shirt that Martin Levinsky and Mike Pondsmith were wearing the first time that Cyberpunk 2077 was introduced. And then the tagline of the commercial is what the shirt said. And using footage of those eggs and other things and to create like the atmosphere. And it's funny. I need to continue. I stopped doing them,
I
but I
love
need to
them, yeah.
continue to make more.
Yeah, I would love you to make more. They're not just entertaining for what they are. Like, I love that stuff. Like, in the Dark Horse World Art Book and in the Red Core Book, like, I love when they put those fake ads in there about different things, whether it's hiring a lawyer, a certain type of kibble, or whatever. But I love how you've did one for like almost each corporation and like weapons stuff. I don't know. I love those. I definitely encourage you make more game masters. I think that would love them. It's very helpful, and I want to start rocking them in the game to my players too. Like mix them in with scream sheets. I think they're awesome. But when it comes to
Well,
lore,
I need to learn a little bit more about new corporations on 2077 and what they
oh
do.
yeah. But you have the advanced red, and you can see all the ones leading into it, and then some of the mentions in that Dark Horse world. But yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more coming up, with 2077, obviously. But about the lore, I want to just talk a little bit about that stuff, and just maybe get you to chat about it for just a moment, because some of the questions that I got from the community, one of which was like, how would
I
you?
hope that just a moment is not a
No.
question about explain the whole universe,
Yeah, if you
because
could.
last time that someone asked me that on stream, I spent literally 3 hours talking.
No. This won't be like, st start at 2020, end at 2077, break it down. No, it won't be like that. No, this will
I can
be.
start in the 80s if you want.
Yeah. No. Yeah, start in 1988 and let's work our way up. But let's no, this is a little more specific. Something in particular. How would you summarize or describe Johnny Silverhand to like people that don't know him? And the reason I'm asking is because I see a lot of controversy on him being an awesome hero, and then maybe not so much. And you hear like how Mike describes him as like quote unquote not a very nice person. So like I've heard that. I'm curious if you can give your opinion and then maybe give a little summarization or breakdown for maybe people that don't know a lot about Johnny Silverhand.
Well, I laughed like a maniac when I heard in one of the trailers, V referring to Johnny Silverhand as a terrorist, and I thought, yeah, that's the thing. I believe that this is the word, but it's very typical about this is something that is horrifying, but a lot of people do in real life, which is believing that someone is a good person just because they are charismatic. And when someone is charismatic, it's horrifying how people around them. The mental gymnastics that they are capable of doing to justify the bad things that this charismatic person do. And that's the thing about Johnny Silverhand. Well, he started as a soldier. He fought in the Second Central American conflict. And during this war, a media star called Tesla Johansson uncovered some secret NSA transcripts and published them. So it was public what really happened with this war, because it was supposed to go to do to be because to protect America from communism and to stop the influx of drugs on the states, but there were dark and political reasons, and Tesla Johansson uncovered it. So a lot of soldiers deserted, one of them Johnny Silverhand, and he was super impressed about the job of the medias, and he thought he wanted to do something similar, and he had some talent in music, so he formed the band Samurai, and basically. He did the same. He did the same thing. It's funny because, well, he was some sort of rage against the machine, but only on the outside. Tom Morello is a person that is really involved politically, but Johnny Silverhand was not. Johnny Silverhand, for instance, was in the Long Walk. The Long Walk is an event, it's one of the most important events in the Law of the Nomads. Because the government wanted to get rid of the homeless of America, that most of them became nomads, and send 600,000 to fight in the Second Central American conflict. And when the war ended, they left them there. So they had to walk all the way to the States by foot. And when they were in Mexico, they stumbled upon Bess Isis, that was interviewing he was there interviewing a band called Justifiable Homicide, but also Johnny Silverhand and the squad that helped him attack Arasaka to rescue Al Cunningham. And while the band Justifiable Homicide, they did what they could, and they tried to provide food to the nomads and tried to provide ways to help them go to the States. Johnny did nothing. Nothing. And in fact, it's very funny because people remember the Arasaka riot and confuse us sometimes with the attack of to the towers, which are two different events. One happened in 2013 and the second in 2023. So in 2013, the girlfriend of Johnny Silverhand was a netrunner called Al Cunningham. She was kidnapped by Arasaka, well, extracted. So, but because they wanted her to develop one program that she invented, but in a weaponized version, which is the Soul Killer. So Al Cunningham developed the Soul Killer, and while she was doing it, she took control of the net of Arasaka, killed everybody except one, stole millions from Saburo Arasaka, and she had everything under control. She was going to kill the last one, return to her body, and then go home. But Johnny Silverhand thought that he wanted to be the hero, so he went to rescue her, thinking that, well, she needs my help. That she didn't. So he organized a concert to create a distraction and used the people attending the concert to attack the Arasaka security officers that were guarding the complex. So he sent them to die, basically. It's a miracle that only 18 people died because he sent thousands. And this is a distraction, and then he reached where Al Cunningham was. He saw her body separated from her engram because she was inside the mainframe, and he had no idea what was going on and picked the body and left, killing Al Cunningham. So Johnny Silverhand killed Al Cunningham. And the thing is that he uses charismatic leadership to send people to die. That's not a very nice person. And then again, in the attack to the Arasaka Towers, because he hated Arasaka for what they did. Actually, they kidnapped Al Cunningham, but she had everything under control. And I guess that Johnny hated Arasaka because he didn't want to admit the fact that he killed her. So then in 2023, when Militech wanted to attack the Twin Towers to destroy the Soul Killer Labs, there was this briefing where it was explained what was going to happen, and it was explained that the team of Militech that was going to infiltrate the towers carried with them a mini nuke to destroy the Soul Killer Labs, that killed a 500,000 people and another quarter in the aftermath later. So Johnny Silverhand was okay with detonating a mini nuke in the middle of the city. What can go wrong? Probably he didn't expect 500,000 people to die, but what can go wrong? So what kind of person is capable of doing that and feeling justified because he has a thing against Arasaka? Not a very nice person. He's a terrorist. He has personal motives. He pretends that the character that described Johnny Silverhand the best was Rage Bodmus. It's my favorite character. Rage Bodmus is the edge runner that is most against mega corporations than anyone. His life was devoted to destroy mega corporations, but really, he was really crazy. And he hated Johnny Silverhand. He hated him because he said that Silverhand is not very different from mega corporations because both tell people what to think for their own gain, not, for a greater good. No. He pretends he has a greater good, but this is only something that he uses to manipulate people. In the end, everything is personal for him. And he's not thinking about the greater good. He's thinking about the good for himself. And it's funny because, well, now in the video game, it's going to be Keanu Reeves. And Keanu Reeves is a person that has a certain image. There's a very few films in which he is actually a real asshole, like, in Neon Demon. Here is like a horrible character, but usually he's the typical anti-hero that is nice, is a very good person, and is ready to sacrifice himself for others. And he has this charisma. And also, the same way as Johnny Silverhand, he creates this image in which people are going to try their best to not believe in all the horrible things he did.
Now that's so well put. And you're so right too about, extremely charismatic, narcissistic style people that will almost, people will go through mental gymnastics just to justify the support because they're impressed with that charisma or what, or the tactics of someone that can be narcissistic. And I think that's so well put because there's definitely people that kind of debate both sides. I've seen it online, but with recent lore kind of coming about and maybe the help of some of your videos, I see more people kind of seeing the truth behind it and what happened, and they're kind of seeing him for what he was. And also you mentioning Keanu Reeves, it's funny. That's another thing that I see in a lot of conversations is how, Keanu Reeves is, like you said, the kind of anti-hero, hero style character in movies, but he's always kind of that the good guy, right? And in real life, Keanu Reeves is actually a super nice guy and very, just a good-hearted person. And then he's being attached, as that actor and as the big name into it. into this Johnny Silverhand, who's almost, like you said, a bit of a terrorist. It's kind of crazy. But I love it. I think it's so interesting. And one of the things you mentioned too about, like, for instance, the nuke bomb and the way that everything went down and what Johnny did. How do you feel when it comes to like Arisaka versus Militech? Because I see a lot of debate there as well. And for me personally, like over the years, I'm more of a fan of like Arisaka than I am Militech. I see like the Militech aligning with Kress, kind of, the president stopping voting ability. It just seemed very, oh, we're anti-communist, but we're gonna kind of control the country or sort of vibe.
You are confusing two different things of the law.
Okay, yeah, break that down and explain that,
The president,
and then tell me about the Arisaka versus Militech sort of debate.
ending the elections was was Jonathan Seward, but it was changed in Cyberpunk Red because the part of the collapse was rewritten, and in what now is the canonical law was Harold Hunt. But the martial law was proposed by the Secretary of Defense, Jonathan Seward. But this happened, I mean, the martial law was lifted in 2004. So, I mean, that's years and years ago. And Militech didn't side with the government. The government nationalized Militech during the Fourth Corporate War. Militech was killing a lot of people in the States, and there was a lot of pressure to for the President Elizabeth Kress to do something about it, and what she did was nationalizing Militech.
Oh, okay.
And she wanted when the attack of the towers happened, Arasaka was in the was controlling Night City. Night City was called Arasakaville, and he demanded the governor of North California, a lady called Denise de la Vega. He demanded to Denise de la Vega some protection, and if she didn't comply, he would release the Soul Killer on the population of Night City. And as the governor didn't like the idea, what she did was authorizing Elizabeth Kress to send in a division of the U.S. military forces, because North California is a free state. It doesn't belong to the United States, and Night City is some sort of city state. So it's not like the states could send the army without the permission of the governor of North California. And the United States sent their army, but a lot of the assets belong to military because now it was nationalized. But the thing is that this attack to the towers wasn't from the military of the states, was the idea of Militech. But the thing is that it was thought that Morgan Blackhand was a double agent. Morgan Blackhand is the solo of Militech and the solo of solos, and it is thought that he was informing President Kress of everything. So basically, it seems that President Kress allowed a mini nuke to explode in Night City because she was expecting all this devastation to help her, in exchange to help rebuild Night City and North California to regain control of the Free State, and then, annexing it again to the federal government. What I think about Militech and Arasaka, well, my longest living character, Alice Cooper, was killed by a Militech garrison, so I'm incredibly biased. But as Arasaka are way more interesting. The Fourth Corporate War wasn't as much Militech against Arasaka, that it was Sabura Arasaka against Donald Landy, and they were measuring the decks, because Sabura Arasaka was considered to be the most powerful man on Earth, and Landy wanted this position. And the moment they saw the chance, they started to fight each other, to a point that when Otek and Sino reached an agreement, they kept fighting. Like, they were the reason to start the war. You should stop now. But yeah, they kept fighting. But I prefer, as a mega corporation, Arasaka, I find it way more interesting because it's a soap opera. All the
You
family
look
is
at the
like a soap opera.
daughter, his daughter, and everything. Yeah, I agree. I think it has more soap opera drama to it.
Yeah, Militech is much simpler. He's a general and an arms designer. And then and when Militech got nationalized, they separated the company of Lucchesi, the arms designer, and it was only Landi. And in 2077, it's directed by someone called Landi Jr., so I guess that they're family. But Arasaka is like Dynasty. Arasaka is like Dynasty, and Angelina Arasaka that hates his father and founded the Steel Dragons, and Hanako that is a Netrunner, Jiren is a Rocket Boy. And I believe that it gives for, a lot of interesting subplots in here.
Oh yeah, no, most definitely. And somebody, I think somebody in the chat there, I don't know who mentioned it, but I read it just a minute ago when we were talking about this, saying that yeah, Mad Queen has a base knowledge of Cyberpunk of 17. So I can totally agree. She's up there. She's surpassing a 10, I would say, in Red. She's got that Cyberpunk education lore up past 20 somehow with chips and hacking
Actually,
there.
one of my biggest prides in life is that Mike Pondsmith asked me to supervise proofread the low parts of Cyberpunk Red
Yeah.
to find inconsistencies with the previously canonical lore.
Yeah, that's actually one of the questions from the community too. I was gonna ask, which is, how did you feel about being approached to kind of help with that,
Well, I mean, I've been collaborating with Thalsorian for long because, well, when I started, Thalsorian had a different community manager that never answered questions, and at some point they put Jay. And Jay is a lovely person, he's a super lovely person, and he answered lore questions as well because he knows a lot about the lore. And I want to make the questions, the little details in here, because a lot of the lore is explained in a way that it's open to interpretation. And sometimes I wanted to know what was considered to be the canonical interpretation, and we
Yeah.
started to make longer and longer chats about the lore. And at some point, we said we should make a podcast and talk about this on camera because people may want to know. And we started doing a weekly podcast on Fridays. It was like all private conversations, but
Yeah.
in public, talking about the lore. And yes, at some point they asked me to take a look. I already helped in the beta testing of the rules in earlier stages of Cyberpunk Red and testing the combat, the bike combat,
Yeah.
regular combat, the character creation, all that. And I make Cyberpunk Red games for people on Patreon. And we were in on those games. We were testing all the new rules for Cyberpunk Red, and well, they said, well, proofreading, yeah, proofreading of the law. And I have pages and pages of comment.
Nice. Yeah, we talked about gameplay and possibly getting you into some one shots or playing again too. I'm looking forward to that. We need to chat about that a little bit more after this interview. But
Well, be careful because Cyberpunk 2077 is about
I
to be
know,
released.
I know. There.
So it's going to be difficult for me even to make my games.
Yeah, that's what people in the chat were mentioning too a while back, saying that next week they're probably gonna have no free time left or something along those lines. Like, now I can definitely see it when 2077 drops. So I think a lot of people are gonna be MIA for a while. We're not gonna see them around or just streaming, the game, and that's about it. But back to the lore stuff, one thing I wanted to kind of pick your brain at, or at least have you talk about. And I've done this with some of the guys that are Talsorian, but it's still one of those kind of things that I don't think they dive too heavily into this side of the lore or enough. Maybe in the time of Red, anyways, there's a lot of questions about the police presence and just general, like, authoritative figures, like the lawmen, when it comes to, Night City as a total, and then also individual districts and kind of how it's handled. Because we know in the time of the Red, it's very. Rebuilding the city, everyone's getting back into it. And there's just a lot of turmoil and neocorps and people kind of fighting to get elbow room to start their position. And because of that, these districts are very separated. The combat zone's much larger, but even into districts, not just like an old combat zone, but actual, other districts now it's breached out to. But how do you envision or what have you learned about when it comes to the police presence and authorities in Night City?
Well, the funny thing about the lawmen is that it's every kind of police, including the law enforcement division and the corporate police. But the thing about the time of the Red is very interesting, what happened with police, because on the one hand, Arasaka was forbidden to do any activity in continental America. It was vanished, and the government seized their assets. That was very smart. So that's one force less. And also, Militech now belong to the army of the states. And at the same time, just right after the bomb, I mean, all the city services collapsed with them, the Night City Police Department. And this mini nuke also displaced a lot of people to towns adjacent to Night City that were abandoned during the collapse and were somewhere reoccupied. But they weren't, you know, like real cities with the police. Most were occupied by mega corporations that had, you know, laboratories and factories and such. And people started to live there however they could. But the Night City Police Department, they didn't have enough hands to reach everywhere. And even the Psycho Squad was attending like regular police. The boss of the Psycho Squad, Hammerman, made his personal crusade to protect innocents in Night City. But they couldn't reach everywhere, so the city council hired Lazarus to give a little bit more of security to the city. But still, the important people is the one with money, and poor people be damned. This also meant a very important thing, which is the evolution of booster gangs from 2020 to 2077. Because the Valentinos are a booster gang that changed a lot. In the 20s, they were just a poser gang. They were named after an Italian-American actor called Rodolfo Valentino that is considered to be the first sex symbol in the history of cinema. And this can tell you what did they have in mind. I mean, they were a booster gang that were only interested in sleeping with people, and that's pretty much it. And at some point, when this collapse of the Night City Police Department happened, they started to be the ones who took care of the communities, and they turned into a vigilante booster gang, the type they are in 2077. Also, another new vigilante booster gang started to appear, like the Sixth Street.
Sixth Street, yeah.
That were former soldiers that participated in the Fourth Corporate War. That at the beginning of their history, in the time of the Red, they wanted to protect people, but it all evolved into 2077. They were the typical bullies. That I will protect you for money, meaning either you pay for my protection or I'll kill you. And so lovely people, lovely people. And how this is very interesting because a lot of booster gangs evolved into vigilante booster gangs just because the police couldn't handle everything.
Yeah, no, I definitely get the vibe, like when we run Red, very similar to that, where there are these sort of guardian angel style gangs, like you would see back in the day in like New York and big cities here in the States. There's these people called the guardian angels that are, you know, they roam the subways and stuff. They wear their red berets and they protect innocent people from other real gangs and bad people, you know? And it reminded me of that with like Sixth Street and Valentino's, like everything that you mentioned where it's like that. But I picture that more in the districts that are combat zone heavy or involved, like in that new Night City map in Red, you know, the parts that are more red. But when it comes to like little Europe and, you know, maybe more of the nicer parts of Night City or something along those lines, you know, the parts in that map that are like the shades of green, right? I picture those more with like district security or private hired by the district representatives or councils of the city or something along those lines, because I don't picture so much in the nicer areas being protected by even good gangs as much. But again, it's very open to GM, you know, interpretation and however you want to build your world and lore and stuff. But how do you picture all that, you know, not just based on what you've read and learned in lore and how you imagine, but also like on a personal level, how do you picture Night City when it comes to the nice districts versus the combat zone districts?
Well, in the nice districts, I imagine Lazarus taking care of the security because they can't afford, even if it's by making a pool with the neighbors, that one day and the neighborhood's protected. And the poor people just do what they can. And usually when people do what they can, they end up either joining a gang, and if they have enough initiative, creating their own, like happened with the Sixth Street. Even though in Cyberpunk Red it's not explained exactly in what part of Night City do you have the different gangs, it's something that you can create yourself, like cut and paste. I like this gang here, I like the other gang here. And that's what I do when I direct the games. Usually gangs have their turf, and they are protective of their turf. And if you are not in good terms with them, maybe you shouldn't set foot in that district.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense, real world and in the role-playing game world, you know. It's just how it is. When it comes to you know, a lot of these tabletop gaming communities and sites. You see a lot now are using the virtual tabletops, whether like Roll20 and Fantasy Grounds. There's a bunch of different ones online and different versions, and the virtual tabletop, you know, that you can get through Steam and different options. How do you see, and a lot of this started obviously because of the quarantine. You know, when that started, a lot of people stopped playing at home with friends or local shops, and everybody started getting online. How do you feel about all that? And also, how do you see the future of gaming, whether online or in person and stuff?
Well, on the one hand, I do my Cyberpunk Red games on Roll20. I was a little surprised because past Saturday we had a game and they had to introduce the new characters of Cyberpunk Red, but no one made the Cyberpunk Red character sheet yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hope that for the next game they someone uploaded it. But yes, I like the fact that it makes the game more dynamic because you don't need to, you know, throw dice and count. You simply click and you have the resolution even with modificators. And this is the thing that, for instance, in Cyberpunk Red, they try to make it shorter by removing the stat in the roll when it comes to net running, and which I find a little weird. But well, I understand that this is a question about you know, throwing dice and counting, because you have a lot of variables when net running. But it's different. The good thing about doing it online is that you can play with people that is on all corners of the world, really, which is something that obviously physically you cannot do. But people that is into tabletop physically won't stop doing it because this is a social thing. It's like when all the streaming services started and you can watch Netflix at home, people didn't stop going to the cinema. People stopped because it's expensive,
Right.
but didn't totally stop because cinema is not only about watching a film, it's a social activity with your friends. And it's the same with tabletop games. People won't stop playing with their friends in tables, because it's not only the game, it's like on the pizzas you order and the pre and the post game. And well, back in the day, while your netrunner was not running and you were like, cash. But I believe that there's the tools online go great to find, especially for a lot of people, because I'm seeing this. Usually, well, I come from the times, I feel super old when I say that, from the times that, well, you had your gaming squad and you tried all the games, but how do you didn't want to be introduced in pen and paper games until you met people that played and that became your squad. Now it's different because a lot of people is acquiring some taste and some interest for the Cyberpunk pen and paper games from the video game, not from
Oh, yeah.
people that play pen and paper, and they super lost, like, where do I go to play this? And it's interesting that they can do it online, because actually Roll20 has a lot of open games for people that wants to start playing Cyberpunk 2020, Red, or whatever other game. And this is also a good thing to for people to allow to start playing pen and paper games, because in physical you may not know where to go.
Oh yeah. No, most definitely. I think, and especially, you know, quarantine or not, like you said, it's limited. You're either playing with friends you already know, or you've got to meet new friends to be able to play. Like you might go to like a game shop and look at a bulletin board, and the rare chance you'll find one you can join, you know, or you'll go to a site like Meetup and try to find like a local game that you can join, or the local shop where you got to pay the GM to play. It's a little different. And I miss, you know, getting together with friends in person. Like you said, there's more of a social thing with that. That's even, I mean, and don't get me wrong, online playing is social too. I enjoy it, and a lot of people do. But in person, yeah, it's about, you know, the food, the snacks, the conversation, the pre-talk and the post-talk, and it's just, I don't know, it's fun. But I agree with you also that, man, the online Roll20 and just being kind of, I don't know, forced into that online aspect of gaming due to the quarantine has almost been a blessing in disguise, because I've met so many great players and GMs and came across other streams and just all kinds of content and things that maybe I wouldn't have looked for if I was still playing at home and just satisfying my cyberpunk needs that way. And you know what I mean? Like it kind of got me to see that there's a bigger community out there, and I was able to meet more people that way. And I think that's really awesome.
In the States, you have to pay to join the games at the
Oh
shops?
yeah, there's a lot of pay to play sort of scenarios. You'll at a lot of the local shops, they'll have like their weekly game night, and it's not expensive or anything. It'll be like $5, or $10, and you get to play for a few hours and stuff. And a lot of people do it because there's just not a lot of options for people sometimes, where depending on where they live, but yeah, I think online has kind of cured a lot of that, and it's opened up a lot of doors to more gaming opportunities and meeting more people in the community. I really love it.
Although playing online for me personally has the difficulty of interpretation because it's not the same doing camera on camera than on person and talking to the person.
Yeah, that's true sometimes. Unless like I try to in a lot of gyms, try to like animate and get into it and show the maps on the screen through Roll20 and things like that. But I do agree, there are certain little nuances and things that like in person kind of carry over much better. Where do you see the future of cyberpunk in general? You come from the 2020 and the tabletop, and you've seen what happened with Red. You saw the first hype video for 2077. You know the video game's coming. We see how they keep reaching different milestones on Red through drive-through, through orders, and you see the video game with the pre-sales. Like it keeps growing. It's going to be huge. Where do you see it going after that? Do you see the online multiplayer for the video game, or other storylines kind of that you can download and add to it, or maybe getting into VR, or I don't know, where do you see the future of Cyberpunk?
Well, for me, it's crystal clear that CD Projekt Red is going to milk the cow as much as they can. And we could see that because we saw a lot of merchandise a lot around the video game without a video game, which is, I find it super funny. And also Mike Pondsmith said that at one point he was going to do a Cyberpunk 2077 pen and paper game. And I'm sure that Cyberpunk 2077 is not going to be the last game because it's surely going to sell a lot. Well, obviously we have Cyberpunk Online. I don't know what they're going to do with this game of a service idea. Obviously an RPG that has some complexity when it comes to, digital video game, not tabletop RPG, because on tabletop you have the game director that it's constantly creating new games, and there is not enough technology to have an artificial intelligence creating the games for you. Although it would be interesting if in the future there was technology in what in which there were elements that were self-generated, procedural it's called, in a way that it would create quests and would create scenery in a procedural way, and working like this, like creating new stories all the time. I don't know if this is even possible, but yeah, Cyberpunk Online or whatever the name it has, it's going to be it's thought about like a game as a service, so it's thought like your campaign of Cyberpunk in which you play for 2 years every Saturday, a new adventure. Well, I mean, they took 7 years to develop Cyberpunk 2077. It's supposed that after that comes the fourth game in the Witcher universe. So go figure when the next Cyberpunk game is going to, going to be in the horizon. But they wanted CD Projekt bought the whole IP for a reason, to milk it. And I'm sure that this is what they are going to do. Obviously, to do so, they have to create a great game. Let's see what happens next week.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think I agree with you 100%. They put so much time and effort and energy into this, and it just looks so badass and dynamic. I agree with you. I think that they're gonna milk that for a while. And I hope they do. I hope it's as great as it seems it's going to be, and we can all milk it for a while and enjoy it for as long as we can, you know? Let's see. I just want to make sure I don't miss any questions in the live chat before we kind of start wrapping this up. Hope we see some more movies and TV shows that are cyberpunk based. Oh, and that's from my. We do an ongoing live gameplay every week on Tuesdays. We're getting ready to move that to Wednesdays, but that is Daniel. He plays our Netrunner. But yeah, he was just saying, hoping to see a lot more cyberpunk-based TV shows and movies. What do you think about that? I mean, we know that animated series is going to be coming out on Netflix in the near future.
Well, we saw some sort of resurging of cyberpunk as a general. We saw Altered Carbon. We saw Mr. Robot, that actually is very cyberpunk. And
Even parts of Love, Death, and Robots, I think, had a very
this,
cyberpunk feel to it.
but yes, if cyberpunk as a genre is on style again, I'm sure we're going to see more series or more features. But
Yeah.
it's not only Cyberpunk 2077. I believe that well, they forecasted well, because it all started, you know, with synthwave movement and all the love of the 80s, and then the cyberpunk films and the cyberpunk books of the 80s and Tron and all that. And it kind of merged with a superstar like Keanu Reeves participating in a video game
Oh,
that
yeah.
is massive, and everybody's talking about cyberpunk. So yes, they even did a porn film, which was expectable, I guess. But also, I expect that the Edge Runner series is very successful. But I'm sure that we're going to see how cyberpunk as a genre comes back again. But it needs some rewritten. It needs some advancement, because cyberpunk was a speculation from the 80s, and on a political level, a lot of things. Pondsmith nailed it. He had a
Yeah.
time machine. And a lot of videos that I do talking about the politics of cyberpunk, a lot of people said, "Are you talking about the game or the current politics?" Well,
Right.
yes, it's the game. I mean, it's the game. It looks a lot like the world nowadays, except for the cyber war and the flying cars.
Oh, I agree a hundred
Yeah,
percent.
I get demonetized a lot because YouTube doesn't like people talking about politics, and I get demonetized a lot because the artificial intelligence that the algorithm of YouTube that decides so can't tell the difference.
Yeah. Oh no, I totally agree. What was that article or interview that Mike put out and said, this isn't a game, it's a prediction. I forget how they worded it, and I was like, oh my God, that's so true. Like,
Speculative
it,
fiction. This is called speculative fiction.
yeah, and
It
it.
was speculation. All science fiction is always a speculation, and that is especially speculation of cyberpunk is always dark and grimy. And well, he made a very, very dark speculation, way darker than William Gibson. That he's the most famous, but not he's
Yeah.
not the best. I mean, not even close. And but Mike Pondsmith was darker, especially when it comes to politics and when it comes to not only ruled by mega corporations, but the interest of different forces and people in the middle going to from one way to the other. And this is something that needs a revision, in the sense that, for instance, in the 80s, the internet just started, and the ideas of what the internet was going to become were just ideas. Now we saw what it become. So we need to, it needs an evolution in the sense of technology, what is going on nowadays. Instead of doing some sort of retro fantasy in which you still have fax machines like in the 80s, think about where are now and project from now and create a new speculative fiction, because a lot of things changed also socially.
Oh yeah. No, definitely. And I think that's a good point too, like when it comes to GMs that kind of I don't know, make up their own world building within cyberpunk when it comes to the tabletop role-playing game. I love that RTG kind of promotes, make it your own, elaborate on that. They always put things like that within the rules and lore for game masters, and I think that's important because, like you said, it's a lot of cyberpunk vibe and kind of where it was founded has almost a retro 80s cyberwave vibe to it, even though it is futuristic. It has that old school, I don't know, 80s aesthetic to it, And I think when it comes to like the technologies and cyberware and weapons and kind of where things go, there's a lot of room for interpretation and kind of, I don't know, interjection of your own invention and creativity when it's as a game master. I think that's important. But back to the TV and movie stuff.
Before you go
Yeah.
to this, I find very interesting that Cyberpunk 2077, instead of being retro of the 80s, is retro of the 90s.
Yeah. No, it's stepping up. And there's.
Like, well, evolution, evolution. Let's go back to grunge and mix it with, with glam, basically.
Oh
Grunge
yeah.
with glam. And it's a very interesting combination. I'm looking forward to learn more about the styles of Cyberpunk inside the game.
Oh yeah, me
We saw some
too.
glimpses, but I mean, this is the part that usually I've been an art director for long, and that this is the part that I like investigating in video games. That's why I love Horizon Zero Dawn. That was a lesson in art direction for video games to come.
Oh, nice. No, I definitely see, and not to age myself too much, but like it's definitely that sort of, I don't know, spectrum of retro or what it is at your moment in a timeline where like I remember, back in the day there was like 70s parties and then 80s themed nights at like every club that would do 80s, and then as I got older and like I've actually seen like 90s nights, and things like that happen over the years. So it's definitely like go, it still has retro appeal and what's popular, but it seems to be like within that 10 to 20 year mark and goes up or whatever. Now 2077 having that, retro 90s feel, that's a wide gap and stuff, but it's also, I think, what's within grasp when it comes to reality. They're kind of pulling reality lore vibe into this fantasy world that they've created, just like they pull some of real life 80s aesthetics into cyberpunk when it was created, but I did want to mention, like, back to like film and TV. One thing that I've talked about with a few other creators and even some people from RTG, and I've said it numerous times, I feel that just like when D&D streamlined their mechanics with fifth edition, and then it kind of started blowing up in popularity, I think because it was more easily digestible for the masses. They had a bigger marketing plan. You started seeing it featured on things like Stranger Day or Stranger Things and South Park and Big Bang Theory. It was in some movies. You would see like actual D&D play and fifth edition book reference things and whatever. And then celebrities started streaming online. It just, I mean, it blew up and it got huge and popular, and that's great. I kind of have seen that building or the predecessing of, I don't know, those plans or however you want to word it, leading up to Cyberpunk in the same way that where I think when it comes out, we're going to see, because of the video game, we're hitting on multi-platforms of entertainment. It's not just a tabletop, but they're coming out with that animated series. Like you said, Altered Carbon and things have kind of been building up the hype of cyberpunk genre in general. But I think the streamlining of Red is making it more popular, more easily digestible to the masses. The video game's gonna blow up and get lots of attention. I think with that, we're gonna see whether the video game or tabletop featured on more TV shows and movie stuff and references the same way we have with D&D over the years. And I think more celebrities are gonna get into it, just like you see like Matthew Lillard and different people playing with Mike on streams and stuff. I think we're gonna get more of that, and that we're gonna kind of hit this, I don't know, section of time or big popularity wave for the cyberpunk genre, just like we saw with D&D when they hit fifth edition. Do you see that kind of happening as well?
Well, it's been an evolution because back in the day, being a nerd was like an insult, and it became trendy. It became trendy with the creation of the Marvel Universe for as black blockbusters, and the films that are based on comic books, on very old comic books, and so slowly, being a nerd is something that it's become trendy. Big Bang Theory, that is a series about nerds, became super popular. And I believe that this is what later developed into Dungeons and Dragons, which is like the pen and paper game, being featured in series and being mentioned because of that, because being nerd and is becoming trendy. Also, the popularity of video games right now is not like it was back in the day. The good thing about that is that there are so many video games developed that you can allow yourself to be picky and just play some specific genres if you want, and you don't stop playing. You always have video games to play. And Cyberpunk Red is not only excuse me, it's not only a matter of how Tolsorian makes the marketing. A lot of people doesn't even I mean, they know that 77 is based on a tabletop game, but that doesn't mean that they going to play it. But now that being a nerd is more accepted and it became some sort of trend, which is fantastic. I'm not going to be like the typical that I knew it when it wasn't famous, and I feel similar to others, because well, the more people that likes it, the more people you have to enjoy it with you, which is fantastic.
Oh, I agree
and it
100%.
In the future, as nerdism is becoming trendy, I really hope that Cyberpunk Red accompanies the success of Cyberpunk 2077 and sees a rebirth. This thing that you said of making pen and papers more accessible is something that Mike Pondsmith already tried with the third edition that nobody liked. Nobody likes. I know. I don't know a single person that said, "Oh no, I actually loved the third edition. I like it
Right.
better than it." Not a single person. It had its things that were, that were cool and cute, but as a game system, all this simplification that he tried to do, to because the it's funny. The video games, the types of video games RPGs that were done when Mike Pondsmith wrote the third edition were simpler. So Mike Pondsmith wanted to make it simpler, like the video games. But now technology is evolving in gaming, which means that RPG are every time closer and closer to pen and paper. And it's like you try to imitate this when this is trying to imitate you.
Right.
I don't know, up to one point, things have to be more simplified for people to like them. There are a lot of video games that are complicated to play. You need some practice and people's and they are, blockbusters and they sell a lot. And the
Oh.
same with pen and paper games. If you make people want to learn, once you learn the mechanics playing pen and paper games, it's not that difficult. It's just that when it's something that you don't know, it may be a little intimidating because you see pages and pages just to create your character and just like, oh my God, this sounds so complicated. It is not. The moment you introduce people just for a couple of times, most probably they're going to keep playing in the future. And also, after all this crisis with the pandemic, we're going to see an economic recession. So people are going to go back to hobbies that are cheaper than going to cinema. And pen and paper games are very cheap.
Yeah,
It's
that's
like
a
cheapest one of the crew needs to buy the physical game or digital game to play, and the rest only needs dice and maybe the snacks to have, and it's a social activity that is very cheap. So I believe that in the moment of economic crisis, we're going to see how well we also have streaming, which is very cheap. That's the other cheap activity, but it's a great moment for people to start playing pen and paper games again
Oh, yeah.
when the pandemic ends and we can join together to play them.
Yeah. No, and I think you great point to be made of how, back in the day, nerds were, nerds, like the cool people and the jocks would kind of make fun of the nerds, and it wasn't like a cool thing. It was definitely different and more segregated with styles and stuff, and nerds were kind of at the bottom, and like now it's like an appreciated real life role, I guess you could call it, and like I think like you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned Marvel and the way Comic-Cons kind of blew up, and I think all that kind of shed light on all that, and it became so popular that it is now kind of the forefront of real life roles, I guess the more popular one. But
I think that it all started with The Lord of the Rings.
oh yeah.
When The Lord of the Rings was so successful, people, I mean, since I was super little, I tried to convince my sister to read The Lord of the Rings. She didn't read until she watched the film. It's like,
Yeah.
I've been telling you that this book is fantastic. And she
Yeah.
said, oh, you're right, you're right.
Yeah, that's so
And
true. Lord of the Rings.
the world started to be filled with people you could talk about The Lord of the Rings with, which was something that before you couldn't do.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I completely forgot about that, and that's so true. When that started, gaining in popularity more and more, that was kind of like the foundation for nerd culture and becoming popular, and those movies blew it up. But back to the kind of streamlined version of the rules and the popularity behind that, I agree with you 100% about Cyber Generation and, third version of Cyberpunk and almost simplifying too much, getting a little too weird on certain things. But I think D&D kind of did that as well with some previous versions till they got to fifth edition or editions, I should say. I feel that way with Red, and let me, reiterate what I meant by that with streamline. I almost feel that with Red, it wasn't a simplify sort of the mechanics way to let's get rid of some of the crunch. It's too much for people. 2020 was too much. I feel that with like what James Hutt did, being the the mayor of Balancetown and helping create some of those rules and the functionality, is a lot of it was built in. The way that he changed body type modifiers to be built into your hit points by accounting for body and will and using that chart and certain things like that, to where I feel they streamlined the ease of use without simplifying the mechanics too much. He tactfully found ways to build it in to certain parts of the mechanics that make it easier to consume by the game master and players, where it's not so much mathematics, it's just, it's kind of built into it. Does that make sense to you?
You need to be very careful when you are designing a pen and paper game when you want to simplify, because you have to remember that we nerds love numbers.
That's
So nerds love
Hell
numbers.
yeah.
But there were some things that needed some polish back in the day. I mean, I made the joke about net running, but it was true. Net running was a pain in the ass, up to a point that I remember I ended up forbidding net runners in my games if I put a character in the backstory of someone that was a net runner, and if some information was needed from the net, it was an intelligent plus interface role, and that's it. If they passed the role, then they got information. I didn't want to make anyone enter into the net because that was long and long and long. And although it was a very interesting thing to do when it comes to the dynamics of the whole group, it was a pain. So for instance, this was simplified in Cyberpunk Red because the net is destroyed. Basically, you cannot enter the net anymore. But still, more than a simplification, one thing is making things simpler, and a different thing is making things more dynamic. And I think that what they did in Cyberpunk Red was making things more dynamic, more than more simple. Simple is giving you less options, which in the end translates into less player agency. And simplifying is removing the things that aren't really needed, which is very different. It's like Cyberpunk Red has been more like cleaning,
That's
more than
true.
simplifying. It's like, well, this we really don't need it. This we don't need it either. In a way that creates the, it has mechanics that are polished, removing all the things that you really don't know. I don't need, sorry.
No, that's a great way to put it, kind of cleaning it up, trimming some of the fat off of it, I think that's great. I'm seeing people kind of agreeing in the chat there. We're at the end of community questions, so I'm just gonna let everybody in there in the live chat know. We're gonna kind of wrap up this interview. I know for Mad Queen, the time zone difference, it's like super late where you are. I really appreciate you hanging out late with me and doing this.
So I am here.
And see here in LA, it's only 4 p.m. So I still got the rest of my day, so I appreciate you toughing it out and doing super late. I know we were joking about that earlier in the via emails and stuff. But before I kill this transmission, I wanted to just give you a chance for any last words about Cyberpunk, about lore. I definitely want you to explain to people what you have in store for the future of the Mad Queen show and what things that you have going on. I'm sure there's some things maybe you can't talk about, whether via NDAs or you don't want to reveal things you're working on and plans. But whatever you can talk about, let's talk, just let everyone know kind of what's in store. Anything else you want to mention about Cyberpunk first, and then what's in store for the future of Mad Queen.
Well, the truth is that I improvise more than it looks. I improvise well more than what it looks, and I really need to, put my mind into finding something new to do. Maybe, I mean, yes, I had the idea of the commercials. I can do more, but I already did a lot of commercials, and now I need to find a new idea. Because that's the thing. That's the funny thing about YouTube, that I can do whatever I want, but I need to know what do I want to do. And I can explore new ways of creativity, but I don't know, to be completely honest, and I don't know yet what I'm going to do. On the one hand, we're going to have Cyberpunk for the long run. We have the game the next week. We're going to have the expansions. Then in the future, we're going to have the online. But how am I going to do it in the channel? I don't know yet. I don't know yet. Point, I will find out.
Do you think you'll I mean, obviously, I hope you keep making the fake ads. I love that stuff. Obviously, diving more into any aspects of the lore and how you break it down and connect things from 2020 through Red to 2077. Anytime you come across things to talk about like that, keep doing it. We all love it, But I was wondering, are you going to get into any live streaming? Like I talked to you about the tabletop, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that. Hopefully, I can get you down with some one shots or things with some of our teams and people I'm playing with. But what about streaming the 2077 video game? Do you think you might do that? Like you used to
Oh yeah.
stream games back in the day a lot. And now it's all about the lore. Are you gonna gameplay?
Well, I stopped streaming games because the truth is that you have to be pending on so many things when you're on stream
Oh,
that it's not.
I thought it was because you stopped. I thought it was because you stopped babysitting. You just stopped streaming games. I'm kidding.
Well, I streamed Ghost Runner. And I'm horrible in that game, like everybody else. People that pretend that they're good, it's not true. Maybe the fifth time you play the game, you stop being it. So if you see anybody that is not killed 100 times, they play the game several times. So I started playing Ghost Runner, but I was copyright hit by the soundtrack, and I stopped streaming. I will stream Cyberpunk 2077, although the first gameplay, I'm going to make it on private. And the first gameplay is going to be a Street Kid solo. What I don't know, if as I talked so much about my first Street Kid solo, I don't know if then my second gameplay is going to also be a Street Kid solo. I thought about my second gameplay to be a corporate, but an asshole corporate, to see how this plays with Johnny Silverhand. Like, hello, you hate Arasaka? Hey, I used to work there.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, I'm not going to make guides, most probably, because there's going to be plenty of people doing guides. And except a very specific thing that nobody else found out how to do and I do, I rather other people doing. It's not what I like doing the best, obviously, doing guides. I like things that are more philosophical or more about thinking.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, how the law evolves in 2077 is also something that at some point I will explain.
Hell yeah.
Because the canonical lore is up to 2077, but then the story
continues.
The story of 2077 is going to continue. So what happens with Arasaka? We're going to blow the Arasaka Tower, because it looks like we're going to blow Arasaka Tower at some point. Because it was destroyed by Johnny Silverhand in 2013, then rebuilt, then destroyed by Johnny Silverhand in 2023, yeah. Then rebuilt. Now it needs to be destroyed by Johnny Silverhand in 2077.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, and somebody, Reservoir Panda, one of our resident GMs at Cyberpunk Uncensored. And let me just mention real quick, anybody watching, if you want to play or GM, hit up the Cyberpunk Uncensored Discord. We're hooking up GMs with players all the time. We're streaming a lot of different GMs. It's a lot of fun. But he mentioned in there something I was going to mention when you talked about the copyright law. One thing really cool about 2077 is they put in that function to avoid copyright takedowns, where you can kind of remove the copywritten music and things, so that's really awesome.
Yeah, let's see what happens with nudity, because it's the other problem YouTube has. And I had the streams taken down because of the nudity of the video game in the middle of the stream. You know, interviewing Miles Tost, by the way. Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
We were interviewing Miles Tost with like 2,000 people watching, and YouTube said goodbye.
Oh my god.
And we were like, What happened?
Oh, God. Yeah, I didn't even think about that, some of the content, it might not just be copyright stuff. The content itself might push some of the limits of YouTube with some of that. Yeah, I'll be curious to see.
Too many limits.
What was that?
YouTube has too many limits.
Oh, yeah. No, most definitely.
When you upload a video or when you do a stream, you have the ability to tell YouTube if the content is for kids or no. Obviously, kids can access to your content, but it won't be served to them. So I don't know why it's so restrictive with certain things, like talking about politics.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And when I talk about politics, I talk about cyberpunk politics that happened a lot, that happened to be very similar to the politics nowadays. But I am not the kind of person that, you know, goes to the extreme or tries to create controversy. So I don't understand what this.
Yeah, it's obviously
like that.
Yeah, no, it seems like, you know, like most of the sites, there's an automated algorithm or whatever that's like triggering things, and there's really no one behind the wheel to look at the details and decide, hey, wait, that doesn't make sense. You know, it's just this sort of automated system that kind of isn't fair sometimes, you know? But when it comes to Cyberpunk 2077, I think maybe some of the violence, but definitely some of the nudity is going to trigger some things. I think, I didn't even think of that.
Anything, it's nudity. Yeah, you can shoot in the head and there's no problem, but show a boob. Oh.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I didn't even think about that till you mentioned it. I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. But yeah. Yeah. Before we, like I said, before I kill the transmission, let people know where they can find you, as if people, you know, probably, like I said, if you don't already know, you're probably living under a rock. Everyone's a huge fan and all that, you know. But for the people in the back, maybe reiterate and say it loud and clear. Where can people find you and where are your most dominant social networking sites or places that you want to direct people to?
Well, on YouTube, I am on youtube.com/MattQuinnShowTV. And I'm also on Twitter. I spend a lot of time on Twitter. Lately, not that much because, you know, spoilers. And some companies started to ship a collector's edition of Cyberpunk, and also some copies were stolen, so there's people that is already playing the game. So no spoilers for me. But usually I am a lot of on Twitter. You will find me at Matt Quinn Show, and on Instagram, not that much, but I am also there every now and then.
Oh yeah, so YouTube dominant. That's where everyone can find the most. And you put out content on almost every day, right?
Well, I some months ago I put content almost every day, but shortly I started working with a writer, because the problem that I have when doing videos is that English is my third language, and sometimes I'm not capable of explaining what I want to explain because I just simply don't dominate the language. So now I have a writer that I've been indoctrinating into the lore of Cyberpunk.
Nice.
So I can vomit all the lore to him. And let him know what I want to explain, and he turns it into a beautiful script. Unfortunately, his beautiful scripts are half an hour long. And yeah, one thing is making a daily 10 minutes video, but a daily half an hour video is from very difficult to impossible.
Yeah, I can see that, most definitely. And someone mentioned in the chat too, I just wanted to verify this, but they said you in the game, aside from turning off copywritten music for streaming, you can turn off nudity as well if you're streaming.
I don't remember seeing them.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's valid.
Saying that officially, that's been a rumor for long, and this is something that very back in the day on one day in the podcast that we had someone from Red, we requested. I don't know if it's really been implemented. Honestly, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. And if they mentioned it lately, I'm trying not to pay attention to things because spoilers.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Now, hopefully they do. You know, I think it would go hand in hand with that music aspect. People are going to stream it. If they can protect the streamers a little bit, I think that would be really cool. The other thing, my netrunner for my ongoing stream, Daniel in there, Gizmo, he was saying also your Patreon, not just your YouTube is your main. You're also on Twitter, Instagram. You also have an active Patreon too.
Yes, and I am patreon.com/MattQuinnShow, and I have one of the tiers is to join the Cyberpunk Red Games, and I usually lately, because I've been super busy with Cyberpunk Red and with a couple more things, and I couldn't do it. But usually I have exclusive content and making of videos. Not lately, because as lately I've done the typical, you know, on camera normal videos. That's not making off the show, but on more elaborate videos like the ones in space and the one of Rage Bart Moss, there's always something funny to learn about how they are done.
Oh yeah, awesome. Well, cool. I think we covered all your, you know, links and places people can find you. I'm probably, you know, when I archive this video and I get the details in here, anybody watching, whether you're seeing the actual live stream now or the archived version on YouTube, I'll make sure I grab those links and I put them in the description along with the other Cyberpunk Uncensored links and such. So if you're watching this, check out the description, show some love and support to the Mad Queen, and, you know, like and share the videos, and anybody looking to play, join the Discord, just hit us up, show some love. Thanks so much for joining me. I really do appreciate it. Last words?
Yeah, no, I'm saying a question that I'd like to answer that says,
yeah.
Ion says, Jim is writer. Yeah, Jim is my writer. Jim, this person that you learned about recently, because we're doing some streams. At the same as with Telsorian, we join and we discuss about the lore. So at some point we had, let's go into do some streams. And also it's very funny because he says a lot of swears. And his fuck count on the last stream was like 120.
Oh, God. I thought I was bad.
But yes, he's the person that I vomit all the lore. Well, I mean, I vomit all the lore, but he's reaching a point where he's learning a lot and I don't have to correct a lot of plenty of things, just a couple in each script. But yeah, he's the one to blame. Of making half an hour videos, but he's really good. He's really good. And the streaming with him is always super funny.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I'm glad somebody mentioned and you got to give him a little plug and appreciation there, because that's very cool. At least you're able to expand with his help like that. That's really cool. But yeah, thanks again for joining me. I know it's late there. I really do appreciate it. And yeah, everybody, check out the links in the description. And we'll see you next time. Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye.